claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal. I'm delighted to have a law enforcement expert as my featured guest today, Alex Scott. I have known him for quite a while. He's a very intellectual guy, very articulate, very discerning, and it's my great pleasure to feature him today. I want to talk with him about Uvalde and about the special brilliant piece exposing the parents by the same fellow who exposed crisis actors as Harrison Hank. Just completely sensational stuff, and see if Alex agrees with Harrison's take on the parents, but especially because Harrison invites the comments of a cop, and what this cop tells him seems to me to be completely baloney, just fake, just phony. So I've got Alex here with me visually on Zoom, but we had an auditory connection problem. So he's coming in through Mitchell on Skype. I'm going to begin now with a slide set where he can see what we're doing here, what didn't happen in Uvalde, Texas, especially the parents. We know we had an early photograph of what was going on there, and interestingly, in the back of one of the vehicles, we've seen a Masonic symbol, suggesting there may be a funny business going on here. We also know that about 2 months earlier, they ran an active school shooter drill in a high school. Frequently, they run them in advance or even at the same time they go live. Thus, if they're exposed, they can claim, yeah, well, it was only a drill to evade responsibility. We're told that the Ruben Ruiz was the officer who conducted this drill and that his wife, Eva Morales, was a fourth grade teacher who was slain. But it turns out that Eva Morales was actually played by a dead Sandy Hook teacher known as Victoria Soto. It's embarrassingly bad, but that's what we had going on here. We have images from the drill, and those, when you check out the video version of today's show, will see some of the questions right off the bat. How did a totally impoverished dropout of ambiguous sexuality who couldn't hold a job as a mop boy at Wendy's buy $5,000 worth of rifles and holographic sights? Moreover, nice lip gloss he's wearing. We got a photo of him. It is pretty strange. The EOT Tech holographic sight alone is $800+. These are very high-end weapons, highly expensive. The question becomes not how did he get the guns. The question is where did he get the money? The whole thing seems ridiculous. And here we have an overview of the scene. Now, this is clearly modeled after Sandy Hook. Remember, Adam Lanza, whom I can convince is a mythical figure, just a fiction, shot his mother, then drove over to elementary school, Sandy Hook, and shot 20 first graders and 6 adults. Well, we got to vary the cadence. So let's have him shoot his grandmother. And then he can go over to an elementary school and shoot up some second, third, and fourth graders. Not only is the weapons he possesses out of his price range, but he's driving an F-150 truck, a Ford truck, which runs around $60,000. He crashes the truck, And then he gets out and he fires it at some in a funeral home nearby and enters a building by a doorway that one of the teachers is alleged to have left open. I mean, this is just ridiculous. Alex, I want to get your take right off the bat on these general features of the situation. What is your take? What's the plausibility of this scenario?
Well, it's with everything else, once you start analyzing it and using some critical thinking, it becomes ridiculous. So, you know, we see these symbolisms a lot, and they like to put these in here because, you know, one thing that we've kind of learned, it seems that as long as they give us some kind of direction that they're doing this, then they don't hold themselves as culpable. So they give us these little signs, the Masonic symbols. Oftentimes you'll see ambulances where the number 11 is involved, number 66 is involved, and then you've got shoes. For some reason, Oladamagard was the first, I think, to point out that there were always shoes at all of these events, and that's another one of their signs. But, you know, when this kid crashed his truck, now this is a newer truck, and I believe it was his grandfather's, so, you know, his grandfather could have bought the truck. That's obviously plausible. But if you look at the truck, the way it crashed in that ravine and broke two axles, it had to be going at an enormous amount of speed and practically had to go airborne. And then after that, once it landed and crashed, the airbags likely deployed. And this kid would have been stunned at least for a couple of minutes. But we're told that he immediately got out of his truck and started pointing his gun and firing at people and then running to the school. I find it really hard, even for an 18-year-old, to recover that quickly from such an enormous crash like that. He had to have been dazed. The average person wouldn't have just got out of the car like that. So, I mean, and, you know, you look for these things and people are so used to these events now and so used to the way the media is telling them these events went that they just aren't questioning them. So I just encourage everybody, don't take my word for it. You know, do some research and look at these critically yourself and think, is this going to be plausible? And that's really all you need to do. Just exercise some common sense and stop reacting. And I know it's easy to react out of emotion, especially when there are children involved. Because nobody wants to see children get hurt or killed, especially. But they pack these things with so much emotion because they know people are going to buy into it. And just kind of, if you can, just separate yourself from that emotion and actually look at the event and analyze it for yourself.
Yeah, Alex, no doubt. These are designed. They've got social psychologists involved in this to have maximal emotional impact. And when you're reacting emotionally, your logical faculties, your ability to analyze what's going on there in an objective fashion is completely warped and distorted. So that's part of the reason for the Sandy Hook and why the first impression is so important. My discernment is that at Sandy Hook, they actually had the media in Newtown before the event so they could get it on the air with maximal impact to make that first impression. And I have the feeling similar things were going on here in Uvalde. Your point about the truck and the airbag is impeccable. That airbag would have had a powerful effect. If he had actually been driving, he would have been disoriented, and it would have been difficult for him to regain his faculties. But to me, this whole thing is just so obviously, blatantly a ripoff of Sandy Hook in terms of the script. I find it insulting.
Yeah, it's really telling, too, because again, like you said, it's important to go back and start watching the footage as soon as you can after the event, because that's the footage that you never see again, because that's when they're making the mistakes. You know, we were initially told that the shooter didn't enter the school, and then we were initially told that the shooter was detained and not killed. And then all of a sudden, it just completely switched, and now the officers are supposedly waiting outside the school for 75 minutes before they go in, which I find hard to believe in the first place, but we'll get back to that. But now I lost my train of thought. But you're saying
how early on we get conflicting stories. There was even one that all the shooting took place outside the school. There was another that he'd been apprehended live. That we even have one that he drove the truck into the school. So you're absolutely right. We're getting all these conflicting stories, which seems to me part and parcel of the you know, they don't want it to be quite that way, but those early reports do make a difference.
Well, there was also a report that a school resource officer encountered him and gunfire was exchanged. And then that completely got scrubbed again with the waiting police officers. So, you know, those first reports are key, especially when they're talking, when they don't really, when the reporters, when not all these reporters are in the know that this is a scripted shooting. I'm sure that the majority of, especially local reporters, probably think this is actually what is happening. So they're talking to people on the ground, and those people are giving their real, true impressions. Hey, this is what I saw. You know, they're just telling people what they saw, and then they walk that back, you know, the people who organize this walk that back and say, okay, here's what we need to do. Here's the story that's going to be set in concrete. Now, this is the official story. So don't show those videos again. And we see this at almost every event. Because the great thing about telling the truth is you never have to remember it. It just always comes up. You know, it's the lies that you have to remember, right, and you have to try and get straight again. So, the truth never needs remembering because it's always there.
Another similarity is the oddity of the culprit. I mean, in Sandy Hook, he was supposed to be, 20 or 21, 6 feet tall, weigh 112 pounds. I mean, it's ridiculous. This kid, ambiguous sexuality, he's got a strange appearance. He was a mop boy at Wendy's. I mean, where does he get the money? There was no evidence in Sandy Hook. The AT officer who explored the matter, no evidence that his mother or he had ever been to any rifle range, that they knew anything about shooting. And yet in Sandy Hook, you had this phenomenal kill ratio. Practically everyone at whom he fired was supposed to have been killed. That was totally implausible on his face. And then, of course, the parents weren't even allowed to see the bodies of their children, which is ludicrous. Wayne Carver, he was supposed to have been, who was a Connecticut state medical examiner and was a glue that held the whole story together, said there would be time for that later, but they thought it was more appropriate just to identify them based on photographs. I'm convinced that's because most of them only existed in the form of photographs. And these were made up kids, fake names. I have proof in a lot of those instances that was how it was done. Here, we never see any bodies. I mean, I have a checklist about law enforcement to identify false flags and stage events. And among the very first three items, I make no surge of EMTs into the building, no string of ambulances to rush their little bodies off to hospitals where they can be declared dead or alive, no medevac helicopter called. All those were not only true at Sandy Hook, but they were true at Orlando. They were true at Parkland. They were true at Buffalo. And now here again at Uvalde, where Scott, not to anticipate, they even ran out hearses. Ambulances, real medical facilities aren't going to participate in a drill because they may be needed for a real medical emergency. Someone has a heart attack and he dies because they were off at a drill. No, they won't do that. So they had such a dearth of ambulances, they actually ran out hearses. Can you believe that, Scott? I mean, are the American people so dumb they don't understand hearses don't have any medical equipment? Hearses are used to transport caskets to funerals, that hearses are not appropriate to be there, but they could hire hearses and they figured it would evoke images of death. Your thoughts?
I have never been to a scene of a homicide or a serious injury where a hearse was used to transport a body. They just, we don't use hearses to transport bodies. Hearses, if someone is on home hospice and they die in the home, or if there's an accidental death and they've already contracted with a funeral home, sometimes it's funeral home, but you know, there's not going to be any autopsy with that because the cause of death is already known, 99.9%. So when a body is picked up, especially when a homicide is picked up, it's picked up by EMS and transported and they're pronounced dead at the hospital. Or if they're already deceased, it's always the coroner's office, and they almost always have vans. Some are unmarked, and some identify them as the coroner's office. But you have to have, when you have a homicide, you have to have an investigation. So that's why they send the coroner out. You know, the coroner pronounces the person dead, and then the detectives go in and they do their investigation. And then once their investigation is done, then the body's cleared out and transported to the morgue. or to the coroner's office. So, yeah, for hearse to be involved in this, it's just another red flag. When you see a hearse coming to a homicide, you should immediately question it. Now, I will say there might be tiny communities whose coroner's office might have a hearse, but it will usually be marked coroner's office.
Yeah, yes, good. Well, here are some more ways in which they blew it. Let me get set up here once again. In addition to the oddities we had in the aftermath, just as at Sandy Hook, they had two photogenic kids, one of whom was the Noah Posner, the other of whom was Emily Parker. He was a little dark-haired boy, just darling. She was just a beautiful little girl, blonde-haired, blue eyes. They were the center of attention and evoked emotional response, such that sympathetic but gullible Americans contributed between $27 and $130 million. Divided by the 26 surviving family, that works out to between $1 and $5 million for faking having lost a child at Sandy Hook. Here, they seem to have decided that Amory Jo Garza, who is 10, would be their poster girl for this event in Uvalde. But it turned out that they committed a glitch. They had two different fathers appearing on two different networks, both claiming to be her parent. Watch this, Alex.
Sorry for your loss. You're holding a picture of your daughter. She had just won an honor roll. What do you want people to know about her?
She was just trying to do the right thing. She was just trying to call the cops. This is literally like her worst fear.
She talked about something like this.
So I'm a mid-aid. So when I arrived on the scene, they still had kids inside. They started bringing the kids out. And I was...
And Joe Garza talking about his daughter, who has died here, 10 years old.
10-year-old Amory Jo Garza was another fourth grader at Robb Elementary.
She was a real good student. She was a very good daughter.
Amory loved to draw, do science experiments, and make people laugh.
She was the perfect daughter, yeah. She was the perfect daughter.
When he heard about the shooting, Alfred Garza III raced to the school. While waiting for news about his own daughter, Garza says he tried to comfort the children who did manage to get out.
They were just overwhelmed.
It's hard to even wrap your mind around something like that.
This is the last photo he has of his baby girl, posing proudly with her honor roll certificate just hours before the shooting.
I just want to honor her name. I just want her to be remembered as the type of person that she was.
Now, of course, I mean, they're both claiming to have the last name Garza. I myself had parents who divorced and they both remarried. So I had a father named Fetzer. I had a stepfather named Scott. Jim Stone nailed this, the massive screw up. Two different crisis actor dads claiming the same daughter with the same name and the same honor roll certificate. Both dads claiming the same last name. I mean, after all, they tried to patch this up, Alex, by saying it was a dad and a stepdad, but then it would have to be daughter and stepdaughter, and they'd have different names. But one's Angel and the other Alfred Garza. I mean, what bullshit. Just unbelievable. Not only that, but we have several reports of the premature announcement. This is like Sandy Hook, Alex. Here you have on 20 May, Robb Elementary shooting, second deadliest in U.S. history. It's being reported, but the shooting didn't take place for 4 days later, and yet they're reporting 19 students, two adults. And remember, to vary the cadency, you had Adam killing his mom, and then 20 kids and six adults. So now you have the debut of the same crisis actor known as Victoria Soto, in Sandy Hook, making her debut in Texas. Here we have a tweet from S.J. Rollins. You mentioned Victoria Soto. That's her on the right, resurrected as Eva Morales in time to be shot at Uvalde, and then reminds us on Dr. Oz when he had a kid from Sandy Hook and he was asking him softball questions. Are you proud of your teacher? The kid shrugged and said yes. After that, he continued, The kid got annoyed and frustrated and said it was a drill, but Dr. Oz did nothing with it. Alex, this is even more surprising. Look in the background. Remember I mentioned Wayne Carver, the medical examiner? Well, he's supposed to be deceased, but look at this clip. I'm convinced.
The healing will take place. It's just going to take a while.
Look at the glasses. The glasses are the same.
Healing will take place. It's just going to take a while.
Alex, that's... That's a lot there, but I'm eager to get your comments on all of the above.
Well, that definitely, it does look like Wayne Carver. I think we need a little more investigation into that. But again, is that also maybe something they did on purpose to make people like us think, oh my God, they even brought Wayne Carver into their Sandy Hook-like shooting? So, you know, I don't put anything past what they do, and it's completely plausible that Wayne Carver could be there. But again, I need a little more, we need to do a little more investigation on that. But, you know, going back to these parents, you know, it was, two fathers were interviewed a few times, and the only time that they made the distinction that one was a stepfather was after they got caught. They, you know, they never claimed one was a stepfather, and they had they were holding the same exact picture of this girl with her award. I mean, the same exact picture. And if you'll notice, you see this a lot, there was really no grief in either of those quote-unquote parents. They weren't talking about how much they missed their child and they loved them and they wish they weren't dead and sobbing and crying and red eyes. They were talking very nonchalant, matter-of-fact. And the one father with the sunglasses, and you see this a lot, they'll interview parents or family members and they'll be in sunglasses, and that's so you can't see their eyes. And a lot of times, like the first father looked down almost the entire time. Well, that's an indication of shame and guilt. He knows he's participating in something that he shouldn't be participating in, but he's probably getting a pretty good paycheck for it. So, you know, body language and the body's micro movements are something to watch, you know, when they're talking to these parents and loved ones and how they react compared to how, and go back and watch videos of people who are going through actual real bona fide grief. And it's, they're completely different. And I'll talk about that a little more in a minute.
Yeah. And also after they were outed about Vicky Soto making an appearance in Uvalde, they put up some photographs of a woman who looks sort of similar, but clearly different as a distraction. In other words, it really was Vicky Soto. Well, I have confirmation. It really was Vicky Soto. So try to distract. They put up some photos of a woman who was different to claim that was a real person, so we wouldn't recognize the identity. I ran that footage about Wayne Carver past another Sandy Hook student as a very keen eye, and she agreed with me that does appear to be Wayne Carver. And the glasses, I mean, think of this, Alex. Not only is the height, the weight, the build, the shape, the head looks a little bit different, but I believe this is visual, you know, just the way the film is slightly distorted. But in every other respect, this was the same guy, and he had identical glasses. They had a plastic at the end, but kind of brass-colored in the middle. Those were the same glasses. I tell you, based upon my experience, that was Wayne Carver, and my dear colleague agreed. And I agree. Of course, I acknowledge we want to do more research on all of the above, and I'm always willing to revise my opinion if we get new evidence or alternative explanations that make better sense than what we've got. But it seems to me they're out to insult us, that they're so in control of the media, they can display their arrogance by even recycling crisis actors, just as they did, by the way, in Charlottesville, with a woman who played Susan Breaux, who was supposed to be the mother of Heather Heyer, who actually died the following day of a heart attack and not during the car crash, or as an aspect of it, is Donna Soto in Sandy Hook, who is a leader of the lawsuit against Remington. It's one and the same woman. I mean, Alex, it's just embarrassing how bad this is.
Well, I agree with you on Susan Bro and Donna Soto and Victoria Soto. At first, you know, when I heard you say that Victoria Soto was the teacher that was killed in Uvalde, I was like, eh, I don't know about that. But then I started comparing the photos. It's, and you got to remember, it's 10 years later. So you got to put a 10-year age on that. And people, obviously, you know, they gain weight around the face within that span of time. But particularly, if you look at the nose, it's the same exact nose. A lot of times we can look at the ears, and I was looking at, although they were different positions, you had one side of Wayne Carver's face shown in that photo, but the other side of the person we think might be him. And the ears are different. It would be interesting to see the other. So there's different creases in Wayne Carver's ears that probably would stay if he had aged. But again, it's something, you know, that we definitely want to research.
What's the odds of a guy who's the same height, weight, build, apparent age, same glasses, same kind of beard and so forth, should show up at Uvalde as was there at Sandy Hook? And by the way, I participated in a video deposition of Wayne Carver. And when I showed him one of the several of the death certificates that were involved in the lawsuit brought against me, he reacted like a vampire to a cross, like he had no idea what that was. It was a partially printed file number. All the others that had a file number, it was handwritten, but it was partially printed. My co-defendant, Dave Gaharia, the publisher of the book, had obtained it from the town, and they'd made a mistake. They'd sent out one that was only a partial number, and Carver reacted. He was just stunned by it. I'm telling you, Alex, it was fascinating.
Well, just even if nobody's ever watched his press conference from Sandy Hook, I mean, it's so bizarre. And you can tell he's probably been coerced into doing this. The one comment that he makes where he says, I hope this doesn't come down on the people's heads at Sandy Hook.
Alex, I'm so delighted to have you here. We got a break now. We'll be back in just a few minutes with Alex Scott talking about Uvalde and what's going on.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey everyone, it's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Now, we got a brilliant guy to whom I shall refer as Harrison Hangs, who's done a send-up about crisis acting. It is one of the most sensational satires ever produced by the hand of man. He has now taken a look at the Uvalde parents and finds their reaction to the situation completely inappropriate and inauthentic. And during the course of his presentation, he makes reference to a police officer, and I especially wanted to have Alex here with me so we could discuss what the cop has to say about the situation, because in my judgment, it's complete bullshit, and he's trying to play Harrison, which I do not like. Now, it looks as though we may have had our audio connection fixed. Alex, are we together?
I think we're good to go.
Well, good, good, good. Maybe you could turn up, if you can turn the volume up just a tad. Very, very good. So okay. here we're going to have Harrison, and we'll do it in portions. I'll run about 15 minutes or something of this, and then we'll talk about it. Here we go.
Coming up.
I don't know what to do, man. Oh, God. I just need my son. I just want my baby home. I don't care.
Yes, you want to be a lawyer.
It's physiologically almost impossible to actually produce tears if you don't have the emotional connection.
We just need to have strength. That is so difficult moments.
On the news, they kept saying, and the hearses are lined up at the school. Wouldn't this be like the cover of Time magazine?
I don't know why they used to rehearse, because they don't transport
they use vans.
And our teacher got shot with a neg and her torso, but she's all right.
When they did the drill.
We're safe because we practiced.
Give me a vest. Somebody give me a vest.
Because
there
was a ton of blood here.
I want people to get shot in the head, but there's nothing you can do about that. They're not going to come out here. Does that make sense?
I could bake cakes and boots.
Hello, everyone. The following presentation contains news footage and images from the Uvalde shooting, interviews with parents, family members, law enforcement. I'd like for you to keep an open mind and decide for yourself whether the reactions from those involved seem real or do they seem contrived and scripted. Let's begin. Enjoy the show. We're going to start with the family members. Does any of this ring true? You be the judge.
19 children and 2 teachers were murdered at Robb Elementary School in Uvalde on Tuesday.
She was hysterical, saying that they shot her best friend, that they killed her best friend, she's not breathing, and then she was trying to call the cops. And I asked the little girl the name, and she's... and she told me, she said, Amory.
Layla was gone.
We left Chicago and moved here, you know, just to be in a safer place for her. And then for this to happen.
It can't happen no more. There's been too many.
This has got to end.
This got to stop. There's no reason the Congress can't pass a law.
They didn't let us know till midnight that she was there, that she was one of the victims.
Her family are heartbroken that she'll never get to have her dream quinceañera.
From my understanding, she had a dress picked out and everything. So I'm going to have to buy that dress, the one that she wanted, and we're gonna hang it up in her quinceañera whenever the time comes. Hang it both up there. So she's never going to be forgotten. She's a big part of our family.
This is the worst of the worst.
She was a social butterfly.
I don't understand how, police officers, they're sworn to protect.
How do you look at them? And how do you shoot them? I apologize. I just got a little siren while you're talking about it. How do you shoot a little girl? How do you shoot with your beautiful smile?
He told me he saw him with big old guns. Mommy had big old guns, and I ran, and I told my teacher, and we locked ourselves in the room. I know he woke up a few times when the thunder went off because he was like, oh, it's happening again. And I'm like, no, baby, you're fine. You're safe. You're here with me and their daddy, and we're here for you for whatever you need.
I have enough footage on my end, so I'm not interested in reading about somebody else's mistakes because I already have to live in my home, so...
This is enough. No one else needs to go through this.
You know, mi abrazo. Siempre que llegaba. Ay, grandma, I love you.
McKenna Lee Elrod's father, Brandon, looked for her for hours before he got the tragic news.
Pretty sad. Really sad. I don't know what this world's coming to.
Call Ryan and see if he's okay.
Okay, I almost missed this. She scratches her eye. Maybe it's a scratch. Maybe it's a prompt. But she scratches her eye, and the woman takes a cue. Wipe those tears. They're not there, but wipe them.
Giving care of Master. She was loving. She was brave, courageous, intelligent. She was everything I had to learn to be.
Showing the unboxing from the teen, which contained a purple dress covered with lilac flowers and cascading ruffles.
Gave Ellie a butterfly and wanted all of her sisters to have one too. Fly till you find your way towards tomorrow.
Yes, so the Disney team also gave them a swatch of the fabric and flowers that were used to make Ellie's dress.
This is my only princess. She's my everything. She, like, we went together everywhere. She was, like, stuck on me like glue. She had her own bedroom. She always laid with me. She always... It's just, we did everything together, everything. We had so much plans for her.
She took her to the park. She liked to feed the ducks.
Yeah, we used to go feed the ducks a lot.
We're so excited about her last few days of school.
My artist, she had a lot of talent with the babies. He had a thing with babies, like my friend's babies. And like, he's just very good with babies. She was always nice.
What would you want people to know about your daughter?
That, I mean, she was the best person that I know. Full of life, gone too soon, always smiling. Full of life, gone too soon, always smiling.
Why do they all list qualities in this manic manner, like they're trying to hit the bullet points?
Still don't want to believe that it's true. I wake up every morning and the first thing I do is cry because I know that it's real. I know that it's not a dream. This should never even exist, these types of laws that are making it so easy for people to obtain these types of weapons.
I don't want any more mothers, fathers to say goodbye to their kids. Because it hurts. My uncle's distraught.
He doesn't know at this point, I assume.
We've informed him that his sister is now with the God, and that she will no longer be with us. And of course he just cried. I mean, he's 3 years old and it's still emotional for him to even process.
She just got her phone. She'd been wanting her phone for so long and we finally got it for her.
She just tried to call because
her visitation is today.
Yeah.
Her funeral is tomorrow, I understand. Did you go visit already?
Yeah, yesterday and today.
Can you tell me what it was like going?
When I saw her,
is it open casket?
Yeah. She looks beautiful. She looks amazing. She has this pretty white dress. We couldn't touch her, though. We couldn't touch her hands.
Oh, my baby. I need you, my baby. Every morning he wakes up, he asks for his sister.
And Garza says it's just too painful for the family to stay where they are in an area so full of memories.
She always makes me laugh because, I mean, I love music and I listen to music all the time. But every time we pulled up to that school and they're about to open her door, she makes sure to turn it down all the way because she gets embarrassed.
That's good. Keep fighting.
Nobody's telling me anything. Nobody's telling me anything. And one of the parents was saying that there's kids possibly held at the funeral home, just confused and worried when I'm trying to find out where my baby's at.
I'm going to wait all I can, you know. I'm concerned.
Just confused and worried when I'm trying to find out where my baby's at. Find out where my baby's at. Find out where my baby's at.
If he's concerned, why is he smiling?
Just trying to be strong for my family, for my daughter, that I know she's out there. Hopefully she's out there and she's scared. I know she's scared.
And at least a few are anxiously trying to find their kids.
Alex, there he had Ed Alfred Garza, the third, the second of the two parents for the very same little girl. And notice they have all these perfectly framed studio quality photographs for these 19 kids. You know, if this had been real, they might have some snapshots of some here and there, something, but each one of them has a perfectly framed photograph. And they're making a point of carrying them and getting them on a camera. I mean, this is unbelievably phony bullshit. Your thoughts?
Well, these are nothing. These look like nothing more than just props for the camera. And again, to bring people's emotions to the forefront, you know, keep showing these kids how awful kids were killed. And you notice that people will always, family members will have their arms around each other and pat each other on the back while they're holding the pictures. But the one parent said something really that I don't think any parent of especially a murdered child would say, when he said that she is part of our family. You know, that's not something a parent would say. You don't say she's a big part of, I mean, that was your daughter. That's like something you would say about a cat that died. You know, we're going to miss our cat. It was a big part of the family. But you're not going to say that about your child. For God's sakes, come on. And again, you know, I'm watching these again, and I'm looking at people's facial expressions, and a lot of times when people know that they're lying, they'll shake their head a lot, and then when they drive home the narrative that the media wants them to say, they'll shake their head like that. You'll notice that when they talk sometimes about these loved ones who were killed, they'll shake their head a lot, and then when they start talking about be doing, they'll be shaking their head, yes, this is what I'm supposed to talk about, this is the narrative, drive this narrative home. We'll go on and then I'll talk about the lack of.
And Harrison caught, of course, how the one reporter scratches near her eye as a cue to the woman she's interviewing, who has no tears, but she puts a tissue up to her face as though she had tears. I mean, telling them, this is indicative of how deeply the media is involved. You can virtually guarantee that if Anderson Cooper is there, it's a fake, it's a staged event. And, it happens again and again. Let's take it another look. And, of course, those here in the audience are only getting the audio. I'll be posting the video, and you'll be able to see it all on my BitChute channel, Jim Fetzer. Here we go back to more of the Uvalde event.
How long have you been looking for her today?
Since it happened.
What are you worried about right now?
She may not be alive.
Have you heard anything?
Nothing.
Eva Dulia Horta's son, Rogelio Torres, also one of the victims.
I'm losing that little piece of my heart that I lost my son.
Where are the tears? Where is the emotion?
I think about him, what happened that day, what was going on in that classroom that he was in. He was crying out for me or something. I'm not sure. I'm just like, what was his last? What he saw last?
People say, okay, everybody grieves differently. And that is true. Everybody grieves differently. But why is it with mass shootings, everybody grieves exactly the same, which is no real emotion and no tears? What are the odds of not one single physical tear rolling down the cheek of any parent or family member in any interview that I have seen? What are the odds of that happening?
Brandi Wilson said she wanted to give her mother a break Saturday afternoon. She offered to take her little sister, Allie Wilson, out to the park along the levee in Algiers with her 15-year-old boyfriend and 5-year-old brother.
Mama, we can't go to the park no more because my sister's still in the pool. I just need my son. I just need him. I need my children.
Oh, Dad, they not breathing in that water. I just hope that they could get their bodies over all in one part so we could do the proper things to give them a proper service. That's just all. That's the only hope we have.
For now, all they can do is wait.
You know, when you hear real grief, it's obvious, it's palpable. I mean, just listen to her. And when you hear a crisis actor, that sounds fake as shit.
The tears of this father pour down. Allie and Brandi were Alan Berry's daughters.
We never let them go. We never. The first time my girl said yes to tell them to go to the park.
This family desperately needs the public's help. If anyone knows about this hit and run and who did this to this family.
Do you know how many people are going to come in and kill them?
No, yo no sé solamente.
They no, nothing. They just, the car hit them and the driver take off.
I'm so sorry for what you're going through.
Don't cry. Yeah, don't cry.
We just need to have strength in these so difficult moments.
Still, for more than half a century, Dale Edge wondered.
I didn't know if he lived.
Good to see you, buddy.
It's been a couple weeks, right?
It was an answer to prayer. If you want to know the truth.
Look for my daughter. I mean, after the shooting, they don't know where she's at. I mean, the list, her name is not here. You know, and we don't know a list of who's gotten thrown out.
So they said they told her just to come over here, and this is the best bet to try finding the daughter.
I mean, somebody replied to us, you know, tell us where my daughter's at.
Do you know what grade she's in?
We don't know the grade, but we know the age. She's 10 years old.
They don't know their daughter's grade?
I don't know how many times I prayed for that man.
He's all out of hair. You help him.
Listen to this news anchor talking about a real event. He's emotionally connected to the story. And in Uvalde, that's not at all what we're seeing. It's almost like these news anchors are not in a real moment. They're waiting for the shoe to drop.
This was beyond heartbreaking today, to stand here and witness a dad return to the scene where his wife was hit, where he was hit.
Absolutely right. I can't imagine either. I'm not a parent, but if I was, I can only imagine what that feels like, right? I have a lump in my throat right now. It's hard to imagine what happened here yesterday, but I have a lump in my throat right now. I have a lump in my throat right now.
I'm so sorry for what you're going through.
And she loved being a big sister. You have a three-year-old son named Zane.
We have a three-year-old son named Zane.
I'm a fourth grader also.
I don't know what to do, man. I just... She didn't deserve that.
No.
She didn't.
No, she didn't.
We never... The first time my girl said yes to tell her to go to the pool.
I don't know what to do, man. I just... I just need my son. I just need him. I just need my daughter. I just want my baby home. I don't care. I don't care about anything else. I don't care about... This always happens in a small town. Nobody expects anything bad to happen, and then it happens. And everybody wants to make changes to prevent it from happening, and then it dies down a little bit, and then it happens again, and then we're just in a cycle.
So let's talk about authenticity and a tactic that the elite have to use.
Okay, I just want to make sure we have the full. Micah, you and Rodriguez, yeah? Okay. And she was 10 years old. Yes, ma'am. Okay, so tell me about her. Well, all the words in the world can describe Micah.
Interjecting with they Robbie Parker, hyperventilating before he speaks.
As much as possible, just reminisce. Just smile. Just remember your child. You know, forget that you're going through heart-wrenching grief at that moment. You know, your child died 2 days ago. That's okay, man. Just smile.
She's loving. She's brave, courageous, intelligent.
They like to goof around. She like to be goofy. Like to bake cakes and cookies.
Sometimes kids kind of talk back to you and you're like, oh, great. She was right.
Probably would have made a good lawyer, right?
Yes, she wanted to be a lawyer.
And why do they do that? Why do they make that choice? See, I have an acting background, so I understand about emotional choices. You know, I was told never fake an emotion. So if you can smile, put that into the line. Go with that. So that's why they smile. That's why they go into this weird reminiscing, is because A, they're giving them an emotional break during the interview. B, it's such an easier emotion to fake.
And I started thinking about the 19 parents that weren't going to get to send their kids off to school anymore.
It's physiologically almost impossible to actually produce tears if you don't have the emotional connection. And vice versa, if the real gut-wrenching emotion is there, like it would be with these parents and family members, it's nearly impossible to hold back the tears if it's not real. And that's why we're not seeing a single tear roll down their cheeks.
And they had a little snow cone vendor, you know, so they did an online snow cone thing.
So this is an interesting section. Let's talk protocols. Were any protocols violated during the shoot?
Let's pick up the protocols after the break. Alex, just your comments about everything you're being seen here. Harrison seems to me to be doing a very subtle, effective job of contrasting real grief situations with a fake, and even interjecting occasionally from other scenes like Sandy Hook, where Robbie Parker came out of the building all jocular, smiling, looked over and saw the assembled press stop, pause to hyperventilate to get into character, and then began talking about the loss of his daughter Emily, but having the presence of mind to mention her donation website. I mean, it was unbelievable, embarrassing even at the time. Your thoughts?
Well, I think it was a great stroke of genius for Harrison to put that contrast in there. So we can see what real grief looks like compared to acting grief. And you also notice people like Anderson Cooper and these other reporters, they give these people prompts because they either don't mention it or they want to make sure they mention it. Anderson Cooper said, "And don't you have a three-year-old son?" "Oh, yes, I have a three-year-old son." And then the other reporter mentioned something similar, you know, as a reminder, "Hey, talk about this too. We're forgetting this." And again, so many sunglasses, so many people looking down, looking their shirt up over their eyes. Again, this is a sign of shame. It's subconscious. People do it subconsciously when they know that they're doing something that they shouldn't be doing. I see it all the time. I've been a police officer for 30 years. I was a detective for 15, conducted hundreds of interviews, and you could almost always tell when someone was lying. They wouldn't keep eye contact with you. They would cover their mouth. They would cover their eyes. They would lift their shirt up. So, you know, these are just things to look for. And again, I encourage everybody to look for these things. And I don't know how much time we have. I maybe get to grief.
Well, we're gonna have, of course, a whole another hour, but we got about a minute and a half before the break.
Okay. But, you know, he made the comment, and I agree, where he says everybody grieves differently. And that is true. But I have a bit of a nuance to that, is that everybody traverses the stages of grief differently. But everybody grieves. So, you know, if we go by the standard Kubler-Ross scale of grief, shock, denial, anger, acceptance, bargaining, these are the things that we look for. And I've had family members react out of shock for the very thing that they react to. I've had them react out of anger.
Couch up there. Turn for with.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out "And Nobody Died in Boston Either." Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope.
We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Just to expand on that last comment about GiveSendGo.com/FundingFetzer, I'm now on the docket of the United States Supreme Court. You can go to GiveSendGo.com/FundingFetzer. You can download my petition to the Supreme Court. Well, I initially thought it was First and Second Amendment case. It turns out that the procedure to which I was being subjected in Wisconsin allows a judge to decide which facts are reasonable and which are not, so that in Texas, my case would have been sent to a jury or the suit against me thrown out right off the bat. But in Wisconsin, even though there were glaring differences, I mean, the most basic facts were disputed in this case, the judge was in a position to merely decide, in his opinion, my facts were unreasonable, and therefore there were no disputed facts. I mean, this is about as absurd as it gets. So if you believe that was an improper move, and I explain it all in my submission to the court, check it out. And if you got a few bucks to spare, I could really, truly use the assistance, because I am doing everything I can to fight the good fight. And what I'm doing here, I exposing Sandy Hook as the grandfather of all these phony fake events, where we're now looking at Uvalde, which is only the latest in a long string. And as most of you are aware, Amazon has banned six of my books, where I bring together the best expert to expose what's really going on. And that's not because there was anything wrong with our research. The opposite. It's because we blow the cases apart. And you will, once you study the evidence, you won't be played, whether it's Sandy Hook or the Boston bombing or Orlando and Dallas, Charlottesville, Parkland, even the moon landing. I mean, really, give me a break. So I'm just delighted to have Alex Scott here with his law enforcement background. He is in a wonderful position to critique the authenticity of the reactions here. Remember, he had 15 years as a detective. He's conducted many interviews interrogations. He can read the body language. He knows the signs. Alex, I'm just delighted to have you here. Further thoughts before we were so rudely interrupted by the break?
Well, before the break, we were talking about grief and how people they all do grieve differently, but they traverse those stages of grief differently. I've been on scenes where a death investigation of a child is taking place, and it's really difficult to keep a parent away from that scene, you know, but the detectives have to do what they have to do before they can release that body. And sometimes it's heartbreaking because as a parent myself, you know, if that were my child, I would want to be with that child too. But these parents are kind of nonchalant. You know, you talk to the one parent, you know, you can't find your child. You know, what are you feeling right now? And he says, well, I'm pretty concerned.
Concerned.
You would be absolutely livid and frantic because no one has contacted you yet about your child and why they're missing. Are they missing or are they deceased? You have to know. And law enforcement does their best, along with the coroner's office and I would assume the school officials here, of getting everybody accounted for so the parents will know and have that peace of mind or be able to process any grief that they have. And we never see this. We never see it. And there are, I think that there are five types of people in who process grief, quote unquote, normally. And those are psychopaths and sociopaths, people and children who are on the autism spectrum. A lot of times they don't process emotion like a neurotypical person would. And then you also have family members who may have a strained relationship with their loved ones, either out of abuse or neglect, and they just aren't close to their parent or their siblings or other loved ones. And so they might not show that emotion. But the fifth person who doesn't do that is an actor. And we see this every day when we watch television and when we watch movies. There are wonderful A-list actors who have crying scenes, but they aren't able to cry. And there are a lot of actors who can cry on the drop of a dime. But by and large, when you watch movies and television shows and people are showing that emotion and crying, they aren't shedding any tears either. And that's because they're acting.
And I love the parents there who claimed their daughter was 10 years old, but they didn't know what grade she was in. I mean, Alex, how dumb is that? How can they even put these people in front of a camera? That's just unbelievable.
Well, again, going back to the early reports, and I forget which quote-unquote victim it was that was in this shooting, but apparently she was like big into, softball. And they kept showing this picture early on of this girl in her softball uniform, and she looked like she was 15. She didn't look like a 10-year-old, and they contrast it with other pictures, and now they've stopped using that picture because I think people were pointing out, hey, this doesn't look like your typical 10-year-old girl.
Yeah, no, I think that's very good. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, what was the one early on, you know, that particularly pathetic actor, one of the two dads, the thinner, the most pathetic of all these actors, saying that it was her greatest fear. What, to be shot up in her classroom was her greatest fear? I mean, give me a break.
Yeah, I find that hard to believe. And we hear this a lot, that that's the kid's biggest fear. And for some, you know, it might be, you know, it's plausible that, you know, kids have a fear of this. But I've not seen it. You know, kids go to school every day, and they hear about these things. But, you know, you don't have droves of kids staying home because they're afraid their school's going to get shot up. And again, the one father out of the two that you're talking about, the lighter weighter one,
yeah,
the younger one, who's talking with the reporter in the tan shirt or jacket. If you slow that down and watch, that reporter also has to cover his mouth and turn his head away because he's laughing.
Yeah, because it's so effing absurd. Let's take a look at a little more here, where Harrison is starting to talk about the protocols and whether they were followed. Here we go.
Anything weird? So I talked to a law enforcement friend of mine to see if any protocols were violated.
I'm a 18-year law enforcement veteran. I teach a civilian response to active attacks I'm also a certified crime prevention specialist, security, target hardening. That's my expertise. So in a scenario where you have like an active shooter, and if you have fatalities in a kind of a shootout or execution hostile, mm-hmm. there's going to be no ambulance. It's going to be just coroner, ME, and a lot of police presence. When people are getting shot in the head, like, there's nothing you can do about that. They're not going to call ambulance. Does that make sense?
Okay.
There's no point. You'll have the forensic people. You'll have a lot of that.
Okay, that cleared up some of my notion of that.
Alex, this is part of the absolute worst of what this guy is delivering, a bad payload. Your comments.
Well, you know, when you first have a scene like that, you don't know who's dead and who's not. You know, if you have multiple people like that, so you do dispatch ambulances, and we don't make the determination as to somebody is dead. You know, a lot of these people, they need triage. We tell people, you know, when we're conducting our trainings, just civilians, that when we show up, don't be surprised if we're walking over dead bodies, because we're trying to get to the people who are still alive, the people that who we can triage and get out of there as fast as we can to prevent them from dying. So we don't always, you know, it's not always a foregone conclusion that when we arrive on a scene, everybody is deceased. So you are going to have ambulances. Now, they may be disregarded once they get there by the coroner's office. The coroner's office is there, but usually the coroner's office comes after the ambulance.
Yeah, yeah, and when you got an active shooting, how the hell do you know who's going to be shot, who's not, how badly? EMTs actually say the only circumstances under which they are allowed to declare someone's dead is if they're decapitated, if their head is separated from their body, or if their body is cut in half. So this guy is a bad source, and Harrison needs to know this is complete bullshit coming from this guy. I was shocked when he used him as a resource.
Well, there are instances on ambulances. I know in my city, I live in a major metropolitan city, and a lot of our ambulances are staffed with actual licensed physicians. The emergency room physicians are on, and the emergency room physicians can pronounce somebody dead.
Yes.
But generally not the EMT or a paramedic. They either have to wait for the physician to come on scene or for the coroner to come on scene.
Yeah, so when Harrison's asking him where protocol's violating, the guy's trying to paper it over. What he's doing is just bullshit. I'm just shocked. Let's listen to some more.
Scene would be total chaos with ambulances going in and out, taking people out, air flighting. He continues.
I had to talk to some of the people on the ground. The problem was you had a shootout in the parking lot, which ends up in a barricaded subject. So the way we handle a barricaded subject is totally different than we handle a mass shooter. There was a lot of dynamics. Problem is, it's called a fatal funnel. The first four or five people go down before they ever get to the shooter.
Right.
The scenario just freaking sucked. How do you get officers in without allowing four or five dead officers? He was putting so many rounds at them. It still should have taken 45 minutes.
In your opinion, was this a real shooting?
Yes, just from talking to people on scene.
How many people did you talk to that were there?
Mostly DPS.
Where grief counseling will be available for them, for students, and for anybody else who may need it.
Here we got a hearse.
Arrived at the school late yesterday to pick up the bodies here from the scene.
Well, hearses are seen arriving at the school.
And tonight there are still hearses lined up outside the school. A local funeral home has now offered services for all of the victims at no cost.
My jaw literally hit the ground. I don't know, instinctively I knew this was total BS, that hearses should not be at the scene. On the news, they kept saying, and the hearses are lined up at the school. Wouldn't this be like the cover of Time magazine?
I don't know why they use the term hearse, because they don't transport. The enemy's office doesn't, they use vans.
Right, so is hearses really odd?
I mean, the term hearses, yeah, for sure. Those hearses, that would never be at a scene. But we call them the body snatchers. The body snatchers are always in an unmarked, unscripted vehicle.
Right. If this is an inside job and staged, they want something that people can identify with, which would be a hearse. They put this imagery in your head of hearses are lined up at the school, even though there are no hearses lined up at the school. I've seen no photos of it. Do the search for yourself. There are no images. Who pronounces someone dead at the scene? Do you have to take them to the hospital to pronounce them dead?
No, we can. They can be pronounced on scene.
Have I been wrong about the hearse thing? Have they always been there?
Breaking news has just been handed to me. President Kennedy has been shot and is presumed dead, while hearses are lined up along a grassy hill.
This just in, Babyface Nelson has been riddled with bullets in a shootout with police. In an ironic twist of fate, Babyface managed to hide behind a hearse that was later used to recover his own body. Night-night, baby.
A shocking development out of Los Angeles tonight. Ex-wife of O.J. Simpson, Nicole Brown Simpson, and her friend Ron Goldman have been found slain in an obvious double homicide. Early reports indicate that several hearses have arrived at the scene.
The unsinkable Titanic has run into the unthinkable. Striking an iceberg, the massive ship began to sink. Horse-drawn hearses aided in the recovery effort, staying afloat in the icy waters.
Good night, you guys. Man, everybody in the business knows that Vegas, man. Vegas got the best hearses, man. And when I saw them, Gold 22s rolling up to pick up his body from the scene. You want a hearse with 22s? Yeah.
This video surfaced on Facebook. It's the grandfather of the shooter giving a tour of the home where his wife, the grandmother of the shooter, was shot in the face.
Now, did you have bullet holes in the house when you came home?
No.
No, okay, praise God.
No, I pee right here. Uh-huh. I think, the way I see it, I don't know. But there's blood all over.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if he shot it from here to there.
Oh, wow, because it is.
Remember from there? Because there was a pool of blood here.
Really? And you had to clean it up?
My sister and this friend of mine, her cousin, cleaned it up.
Yeah, maybe we could paint the wall chartreuse and put up some wainscoting. Here's my wife's blood that was splattered there 2 days ago. Guys, this is a f***ing active crime scene.
She shot her from here to there?
Because it is.
Remember from there?
Which way did he shoot my wife? Was it this way or that way? I'm a regular f***ing Columbo, aren't I?
Wait, so this is all from...
Some of her skin or whatever.
Oh my gosh, look at Roland. It's all the way up here.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, none of this behavior is making any sense to me. I'll let you guys, be the judge on that for yourself. But I think when you piece it all together, this really stinks to high heaven. Now, I did get one thing wrong, one notion. And my friend cleared that up. Isn't this a crime scene? For days after the shooting, and wouldn't they wouldn't let him or anybody else in there?
It depends on how long it takes to process the crime scene.
How long does that typically take?
Some of the shootings that I've worked, maybe 3 hours start to finish.
Okay, so it could be turned back over to him. Now, his behavior is weird, but that's my own interpretation. He did say one weird thing, so you tell me what you think of this.
Because there was a pool of blood here.
Really? And you had to clean it up?
My sister and this friend of mine, her cousin, cleaned it up.
We process it and leave. We don't clean it.
What about a pool of blood?
It depends on if the blood is relevant to the investigation. They can document splatter and the direction,
yeah,
the type of forensics, but that's all done on pictures and forensics, like measurements.
Battles are left as well in this scenario where it's the grandmother. They know who she is. They know where the blood came from. It's her. Is that right? They would leave the puddle
of
blood?
Sometimes Hollywood makes it seem like they do a lot more.
Are you willing to watch my film and then
I'll watch it.
Make up your mind if it was an inside job or not? Because I'd like to get your opinion before and after. That'd be really cool. Even if you still have the same opinion, it'd be cool. So what?
Let me say, Alex, this guy seems to me to be full of it. I want your thoughts about what he had to say here, the scene of the grandmother shooting and all that. Go for it.
Well, first of all, I apologize if there's something wrong with my sound. My condo crew is out now cleaning.
The sound's good. The sound's good, Alex.
I'm doing weeding. Okay. So if you hear something in the background, that's what that is. So let's go back to where he's talking about police officers going into the building and the barricaded subject and the fatal funnel. All of that is true in most cases. If you have a barricaded subject, it's usually a hostage situation where, husband is holding his wife or an ex-husband is mad or maybe a wife and kid. So you've got two people. Somebody may or may not have been shot. And they are a barricaded subject. And we will wait for those people because the adage is that time is on our side. So we'll call in SWAT and we'll set up a perimeter. But we've been taught, as almost every law enforcement agency around the country since Columbine, that the biggest problem with Columbine is the waiting period. They waited 2 or 3 hours before the SWAT team arrived and was able to go in. So when we started doing our active shooter training, the concept of that is you go in immediately to try and stop the threat. If you're the only officer that shows up first on scene and there's still an active shooter, you go in and try and stop that threat. And I don't think that they knew right away that this guy was quote unquote barricaded in a room. He could have been going from room to room, and doing, you know, God knows what. That's really strange that he would say that. And there is a fatal funnel. If someone is if you have a true barricaded subject, you don't just want to rush in because you're going to get cops killed. That's the fatal funnel. There's aspects of that I agree with this person on, but as a whole, during an active shooter, especially in a school where tens of children are potentially getting shot and killed, you want to go in and you want to try and stop that threat.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, I'm very disenchanted with this guy. He seems to me to be a total fraud. Here we have more than from Harrison.
It's the bubble. The bubble is crucial to understand how
Hang on. Yeah, Alex, go ahead.
I just wanted to talk about this this guy's grandfather and his wife getting killed in the
hospital. Right. The way he describes it and all that. Go ahead.
Maybe I need a bigger screen or to enhance it. I don't see much blood. He kept pointing at blood. At one point, he was pointing at blood and checking his thermostat, which seemed weird.
I know.
And then talking about cleaning up all the blood that was on the floor that what did he say, his sister and her cousin cleaned up. I find that hard to believe that they would make the residents clean up their own blood like that. And also this guy said that most crime scenes take 2 or 3 hours to process. Well, yeah, depending on the crime, sure, but we had an instance here in my city a few years ago where 6 people were killed inside a residence and the police made that an active crime scene for 4 days. They wouldn't let the family go back in for 4 days and they cleaned up everything. And it's true that police officers don't clean up blood. That's not our job. Our job is to go secure the scene and the detective's job is to gather information and gather evidence and try and piece everything together. Sometimes the EMTs, if the blood's not that bad, the EMTs will clean it up. Sometimes the coroner's office will clean it up, and other times they have the coroner's office and EMTs and police have services that deal with nothing but biological hazards. They come out and they will clean that. And the reason that they do that and not the family members is, one, that's traumatic for a family member. If your family member was just killed, would you want to clean up their blood? No, you're not going to do that. Now, if we go to a scene and it's like somebody's been cut or something like that and it's not traumatic or anything, a lot of times the family will clean that up because there's not that much of it. It's not traumatic for them. And a lot of times we'll ask them, hey, do you want to clean up that blood? Do you want the service to take care of it? Do you want EMTs to take care of it? I found that a little strange. And like I said, every department's a little different, but by and large, most police departments around the country have become more and more standardized, especially since Columbine. But this guy acts like he's just giving a tour of his house. You know, he doesn't seem distraught or anything that, you know, his wife has been killed, or well, actually, supposedly she survived, but that his wife's been shot in the head. And again, he's pointing to these places, and I don't see any blood. I mean, they may have flicked some spots of red paint up there. I just didn't really see him, but it's just all ridiculous.
It is. That's my opinion. It's all ridiculous beyond belief. Here we have more from Harrison.
And essentially your school is the bubble. And within that is the classroom. Most people are outside of it. You have the lone hero in the narrative.
I just know I got there as fast as I could.
What did you see in here when you arrived?
Just chaos. Chaos. Everyone was trying to get to the school. People were trying to get everything situated. I was just trying to get towards my wife's room and my daughter's room.
A determined mother who the police seem to allow to enter the school?
Give me a vest. Somebody give me a vest. Something. I started paying attention to how far the shots were being, so that I knew the shooter was all the way still by my first son's class. So when I went to my second son's door, the teacher didn't want to open the door for me. So that's when they started escorting me out. And as I see that they're opening my son's door, I go run for my son and I get him.
With both of her kids out safe, Gomez still can't shake the thought of those who didn't make it.
They could have saved many more lives. They could have gone into that classroom and maybe two or three would have been gone, but they could have saved the whole class. They could have done something, gone through the window, sniped them through the window. I mean, something, but nothing was being done. If anything, they were being more aggressive on us parents.
The other thing that you get out of this story is just how sort of disorganized everything mm-hmm. was in terms of the police response there, that she was able to run in even after being told not to.
You couldn't get in to get close to there. There was just so many law enforcement and everything else.
But there's a problem with her little story. Her story of the lone mother going in to rescue her kids while gunshots are going off completely falls apart in this footage. Here she is seen dropping off her kids and then has time to go find another kid to run and act hysterical with. Are you noticing anything in particular about this footage? There is a mass exodus currently happening. Children are calmly being escorted out of the school single file, with other parents no less. Why did a military plane land in Uvalde 3 minutes before the shooter crashed his vehicle and then took off an hour and 23 minutes later, 2 minutes before the shooter was killed? Were they dropping off personnel to maybe protect the bubble? You have a few key players that control access to the bubble and fantastical improbabilities like the bullet-grazed hat. Who gets to thrive within the bubble? The parents and the family members. They are the emotional glue that holds the narrative together, while the truth movement simply spins its wheels arguing over gun control instead of calling it out for the hoax it is. There is a video that came out. You've probably all seen it by now, of the parents going absolutely ballistic, trying to get the police not to stand down. This video to me is 100% real. This perfectly illustrates what I've been talking about. And as my friend explained, the barricaded scenario allowed for the justification for the stand down. Maybe not in the eyes of the parents, but think about it, the barricaded situation allows for the stand down. And the stand down is crucial to maintain the integrity of the narrative. So how do you protect the false narrative? You divert the narrative. You make it all about the police stand down. You get everyone irate about that. And no one's thinking about the crisis actors. And nobody's thinking that it's staged.
But we do know from DPS it was approximately 1 hour from the time police encountered the shooter to the time he was killed.
That's long. I think that's terrible. That's terrible. They should have done something.
They saw the gunman enter a joint classroom through two open doors, but instead of pursuing...
They don't make entry initially because of the gunfire they're receiving.
Y'all need to go in. Y'all need to go do your jobs.
We need equipment. We need specialty equipment.
For the benefit of hindsight, where I'm sitting now, then of course it was not the right decision. It was a wrong decision, period. There's no excuse for that.
We need equipment. We need specialty equipment.
He shot my teacher, then he shot the kids. We're quiet under the table. I was crying just a little bit, and when I heard the shooting through the door, I told my friend to hide under something so he won't find us.
He just like shot like four bullets into our class, but like her nose broke, and then our teacher got shot in her leg and her torso, but she's all right.
That's weird.
I was just scared because I thought he would like come in like our room and like shoot everybody.
We just hear all kinds of gunshots going off, like nonstop, like constantly gunshots. She locked the door and then she just like dropped on the floor But everyone was like telling her to wake up, even though she was okay. Even though she was okay. Even though she was okay.
It's not sounding right.
And we're back to the drill.
He tells us about the chilling moments of his daughter's narrow escape.
That they were in the cafeteria, and when they did the drill, the little kid...
What?
When they did the drill... The,
come again?
When they did the drill, the, when they did the drill, the little kids and the teachers turned off the lights, and they all hid. And they hid behind the curtains of the auditorium. And by her account, she told my wife that they heard, you heard somebody come in and say, come out, little children, come out, little children. It's okay. Is that what you heard?
So the newscaster clearly states that he's recounting what happened during the shooting. So why does he say drill? I can't think of any good reason for him to say drill here other than possibly he mentioned drills that they've done in the past earlier. Is he inferring that because they had done the drills and because they had practiced and hid, but why connect the two here? It doesn't make any sense. What if this was filmed a while ago and never aired until now? And he was simply being interviewed to describe one of the many drills that they've done at this school.
Yes, I learned that we were having a real drill because we practice a lot. And I think we were safe because we practiced.
There you go. They're safe because they practice. They were doing drills. We know that drills have ramped up since Sandy Hook. These kids have been bathed in drills, so they are conditioned and prepared for the stage shooting. So ask yourself, are you seeing any kind of genuine terror in their eyes as they recount these experiences? I don't. What I see is kids that are talking about the drills that they did.
The 10-year-old, recounting what her teachers did.
She ran over to us, sat down, and started covering my friend. She started saying no because he said you'll die. And she shot my friend with the phones. And he shot my teacher, Ms. Garcia, and Ms. Videlis.
Do you remember this?
Louis, you wanted me to ask you what you remembered from that
day. Visit Dr. Oz.
Like, I remember when we were having a drill.
All right, so picture this scenario. The kids are in the school, shots go off, and teachers go into active shooter mode. Just like we practiced, there's a shooter in the school, but this time it's real. But just like we practiced, everybody hide under your desk. The shooter is firing blanks in an empty, designated classroom. Each classroom hears the shots going off in another part of the school. And lo and behold, that's the official story. Shooter's trapped in a room until the lone hero leads the way to take him out, grazed hat and all. People will say, it would take too many individuals to pull this off. I say, no, it doesn't. You have the bubble and you control access. Or better yet, you demolish the classroom.
Demolition now seems the expectation.
Every parent of little children that were here that are still alive, they don't want to go back to that school. So it certainly needs to be a community decision, but that needs to happen.
For the kids and the teachers, they shouldn't have to go back to that school.
He wants the school torn down, echoing similar calls for demolition by elected officials. Over the weekend, Congressman Tony Gonzalez wrote he is working with many private and public partners to ensure no child will ever have to return.
Parents of the victims have very specific rights. What I am desperate to know is, do other parents who had children involved in the shooting but who survived have these same rights? This is crucial. We need parents to demand to see the crime scene. You've got a handful of crisis actors getting their payday, and you have the bought-off mainstream media pushing the narrative. Would the scene have been chaos with ambulances?
Well, people are getting shot in the head. Like, there's nothing you can do about that. You're not going to call ambulances. Does that make sense?
The more I think about it, I'm not buying this reasoning anymore. What about this?
Her nose broke, and then our teacher got shot in her leg and her torso, but she's all right. She locked the door, and then she just, like, dropped on the floor. But everyone was, like, telling her to wake up, even though she was okay.
We know there were ambulances there, but what about this lack of activity, this inaction? The moment the shooter is neutralized, it would have been a madhouse of ambulances flooding in, medical workers, first responders, police. But there's no footage of this. Who pronounced all of these children dead on the scene? Who pronounces someone dead at the scene? Do you have to take them to the hospital to pronounce them dead?
No, we can. They can be pronounced on scene.
But it doesn't make sense that 21 people would be pronounced dead on the scene so hastily. Where is the presence of the medical examiner? Did they not want another Sandy Hook situation?
My sensibilities may not be the average man. No, I don't.
How young?
Sorry, I don't.
How young was he?
As long as you never call him Harold.
As awkward as he was, he did mention one thing.
We have three vehicles and a lot of guys to drive them. Actually, one of the highlights of my administration is that we make them as nondescript and unmarked as possible.
Her nose broke, and then our teacher got shot in her leg and her torso, but she's all right.
What child uses the word torso? Maybe one that had been coached or participated in drills or over 30 lockdowns over the last couple of years? What grieving parent or family member in their right mind would do a media blitz, interview after interview, right after your child was savagely shot to death just a couple of days before? We don't know exactly who is involved, all the little ins and outs, but that's exactly the point. Let's open Pandora's box and force the issue. The whole point of the operation is to continue to terrorize those who are asleep and to hopefully demoralize those who are awake. The false flag really isn't some kind of new revelation. The elite actually have a history of this.
So my name's Robbie Parker.
Ed, please, could we do something with the assault weapons?
My family is one of the families that lost a child yesterday.
There's light away from the darkness. I'm just trying to figure out if he's okay. I lost my 20-year-old, but I had 20 years with my son.
How can you buy an assault weapon on your 18th birthday when you cannot buy a beer?
Alethea. She was one of the 19 children that were killed the day before.
The hearse is lined up. That's a big anomaly for me. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. The ridiculous reactions by the parents and family members. There are no tears. Many cannot see this for what it is, so they won't participate in the solution. How about we each individually use our own eyes and our own intellect to determine what is really going on here? I just want the truth. But who owns the truth? Do I? Do you? Do they? Are you willing to watch my film and then make up your mind if it was an inside job or not?
Well, Scott, I want your thoughts about all this. I think he did a wonderful job of critiquing what was going on there. I'm embarrassed that he's relying on this, in my opinion, totally fake sources cop who's a pretense, and by the end even agrees that he's not buying any longer the nonsense. And we know the police aren't prepared to declare who's dead and who's alive, not even EMTs, unless it's an extreme situation of the head separated from the body or the body cut in half. So where is he coming up with that bullshit? All your thoughts, Alex. Welcome.
Here's the thing. So this officer he's talking to just automatically supposes that everybody got shot in the head. Well, we know that's not the case. Not everybody is going to die from a headshot. This kid was not an expert marksman. I mean, he had just gotten these weapons, and that's a whole other can of worms, how he got all that equipment. But, I mean, what did Matthew McConaughey tell us? Even Emily Jo Garza was shot so many times that she could only be identified by her shoes. You know, so she wasn't, you know, these people just weren't shot in the head. You go into places like this and instances like this, and there's all kinds of bullet wounds if you have a real mass shooting. So for him just to dwell on the headshot, that's kind of unrealistic. But there was a video, Jim, and I don't know if you've seen it. There was a guy who was, again, this was like one of the very first videos that I watched, and he was on scene. I don't know if he was a parent or not, but he was filming everything that was happening. And this goes on for like 2 or 3 hours. He's filming this, and you don't see these huge gatherings of parents, you know, complaining to the police to go in. But what you do see is what looks to be an evacuation of the students from the school. Single file evacuation. So, you know, I'm kind of on the fence 50-50 as to whether or not the whole parents at the school and causing a disturbance and everything was just another element of their narrative and it was staged. You know, I'm kind of 50-50 on that. I do see a lot of parents who are really emphatic, but also you don't really see a lot of video of the school itself. All that video with the parents seems to be recorded in one specific location and they never pan around and show anything else. Maybe it was filmed off site or something. I don't know. Maybe it was filmed at the center where they were taking these kids that they evacuated, but I'm just a little bit skeptical of that.
Well, maybe they were even filming it at a different time, a different day, and then put it all together. I mean, this is what Hollywood directors do. They film this and that, and even the actors often have no idea how it's going to come out until they see the way it's all been edited together. I mean, having an evacuation of kids doesn't show there was any shooter. That's certainly consistent with a drill. The kid saying she was shot in the leg and the torso and she's okay is absurd. If she'd been shot in the leg, it would have shattered her leg if we're talking about an AR-15. If she'd shot in the torso, she's probably dead and she's not okay. So I thought he was a real weak link here. He was doing his best to fulfill his role as a child actor, but I thought it was pathetic.
Well, here's another thing that I've not heard, and maybe they exist if somebody could point me to it. I'd be glad to look at it, but I've not seen any video of one of these quote-unquote surviving children from these classrooms explain the absolute deafening noise that was going on from an AR-15 being shot in an enclosed space. You hear one shot, two shots, and probably by the third shot, you would be deaf, you know, temporarily. You would lose part of your hearing because it was so loud. And to think that these children, so you get in that situation, and if you've ever been in a really stressful situation, in a combat, in a shooting, or just in a very stressful situation, one of the first things that's going to go is your fine motor skills, because the brain breaks down and it's saying, okay, my brain is now in survival mode. I'm just going to do absolutely what I need to do for my biological functions to keep going on. So these kids aren't going to have the presence of mind to be searching for cell phones and dialing 911. They're not going to have their fine motor skills. I mean, I've seen even in training under stressful situations where we've had to reload our weapons, you know, we're shaking, you know, and so for them to go around and search for phones and dial 911 and talk to 911 operators, first of all, they probably wouldn't be able to hear them anyway because of the deafening noise. So just so many things about this just don't add up at all.
Oh, I think you're 100% correct. And this idea of Matthew McConaughey coming down to save the day is just ridiculous. Get this. He's worth about $160 million. So he comes down and cat turd tweets from his ivory tower, this actor is telling poor people to give up the guns and protect their families. Here you go, Matthew. Meanwhile, we get this story. The parents could only identify their daughter's body by her green Converses, and we see the green Converses. I was just given a new pair of sandals, and they have the loose ties just like this. They have the laces tied together at the top. These shoes have never been on anyone's foot. They just came out of a box. And obviously, there's no speck of blood. So one commentator says, whoa, those pair of shoes like they came fresh out of the market. Well, they did. Meanwhile, Matthew McConaughey comes down, and he's trying to give a dramatic presentation, but he's got to constantly look down at the script. He's making hand gesticulations that aren't authentic. And he brings along his wife. And Alex, look at this. His wife is wearing green Converse sneakers. This is product placement. How insulting is that? And, of course, they're talking about tearing down the school. Now, I have reports that, in fact, Uvalde was millions of bucks in debt, that they couldn't do it. We had that situation at Sandy Hook where after the event, they claimed they couldn't refurbish the school because it was loaded with asbestos and other biohazards. Well, they knew that early on. That's why the school had been closed by 2008. So they got a $50 million grant to the Board of Education in Newtown to build a new kindergarten through fourth grade school. I checked at the time. The average cost across the nation was $7 million. They got $50 million, seven times $7 million. And I said, what is this to be? The Taj Mahal of elementary schools? And meanwhile, we have CNN's Anna Navarro flipping out when confronted with simple facts about gun violence because they're all trying to build on this. Jonah Goldberg tried to put America's problem with mass shooting into perspective by citing accurate statistics on gun violence, but it did not go over well. He noted there are roughly 54 million children in school in America, but only 170 have been killed in school shootings in the last 29 years. Alex, he's adding them all up from the fake shootings like Sandy Hook and Parkland and Uvalde to get up to 170 in the last 29 years. So if we're going to tell people they should be terrified about their kids being dropped off at school, we should remind them their kids are more in danger on the drive to school statistically than they are at the school. And she replied, a child's life should not be a statistic. That's moral bullying, Goldberg argued. I make it a basic point that you shouldn't tell people they should be terrified. Alex, it's unbelievable, the phony bullshit that's being issued and the exaggeration of these school shootings. It's a classic example of what's known as special pleading and logic, where you present only the evidence favorable to your case and ignore the rest. It's also known as a method of selection and elimination. Select the evidence you want to present and eliminate the rest. I mean, unbelievably bad. Your thoughts, all the above.
Well, it's really interesting when you do put it into perspective, you know, 179 now, even 179. Sure, it's tragic. Of course it is. But 179 in 29 years, I bet if we looked into actuary sciences and insurance statistics that more than 179 kids have been killed just by accidentally hitting their head on the sink in the bathroom in the morning.
Yeah.
You know, it's, and again, it's tragic. But another perspective is that if you look at John Lott statistics, who is,
yes, I know John Lott.
On firearms.
Yes.
You know, less than 2% of all crimes committed by a hand, by a gun in general are committed by licensed law-abiding handgun owners. And of those 2%, most of those crimes are crimes of passion. You know, where they've killed, you know, they walked in and their wife is sleeping with another guy. Boom, he kills him. It's a crime of passion. And people don't think about those type of crimes. You know, those happen on the spur of the moment, not these premeditated, you know, mass shootings. And the kid was supposedly talking to a friend of his in Germany and texting and said, I just shot my grandmother in the head. Now I'm going to go shoot up a school. I mean, come on. Who does that?
That's a great idea.
This is unrealistic anyway. You know, we have all these mass shootings and stop and think, that's not how the average human mind works. And you can say, well, this is not an average human mind, but such a small percentage of the population truly has those murderous tendencies. It's difficult for a human being to kill another human being. That's why we have PTSD, because these soldiers will go to war and they have to do all this killing and they come back and they're riddled with so much guilt and anxiety over it. Sure, there's a percentage of those people who it doesn't affect that much. But it's just not human nature to kill like that. And so the fact that they're staging all these and that all these people are doing this and going into these schools and grocery stores and places of business and just randomly killing people, it doesn't happen. If you have somebody you want to kill, that's a target. And you premeditate, man, he's really upset me. He's pissed me off. I'm going to go in and kill him. But you don't kill everybody else in the building. You know, you target one or two people.
Alex, you're 100% correct. And what they ignore invariably is a defensive use of guns. Millions of Americans protect themselves from assailants by showing their arm. Typically, they don't even have to fire the weapon. Millions of times. It's estimated that The defensive use of gun safe, 200,000 lives per year. 200,000 lives per year are saved every single year. And you got Jonah Goldberg saying, in the last 29 years, 170 were killed. Well, come pit that against 200,000 a year that will be lost if we take guns away from law-abiding citizens. The NRA used to say it so clearly, when guns are outlawed, only outlaws will have guns, and criminals aren't going to give up their guns. How dumb are we supposed to be? My brilliant colleague, Dr. Ewan, superimposed a 2016 electoral map over a 2014 murder map, and the areas with a higher rate of murder are all controlled by the Democrats. I mean, if you want a pilot study in what stringent gun laws are going to do for America, which is, look at Chicago, which has the strictest gun laws in the country, and you're getting more people killed on the average weekend than you, you know, put together a couple of those, and it more far exceeds what's going on at these fake school shootings. Your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. If you want to see real grief, you know, tune in to WGN or some of these Chicago channels where they're talking to family members who have, who they're, you know, their loved ones have been, you know, the victims of these of these shootings and killings. But they don't want to show that because, you know, that might give their game away. But I want to go back to these parents going into the classrooms to get their children.
Yeah.
And I understand, you know, I understand as a parent wanting to do everything I can to make sure my kids survive and to get my parent out of there. But the police are not going to let those parents, even if that were real, the parents aren't going to let them in. And in almost every school shooting drill that I've been a part of, we tell the teachers, if they're not, if they can't identify themselves as law enforcement, do not let them in. So the fact that these parents were getting into the school and getting their children is a little far-fetched to me, because you don't know if the shooter, if there was a shooter on the other side of that person, forcing that person to teacher open the door. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
You want an authority figure to come in, whether it's a little bit sigh of relief. Oh, the police are here. Thank God. Now, you know, now maybe we can release these kids. But these parents going in, no, you're not going to have a parent going in. There was one story where a father broke the window of his son's classroom, pulled his son through the broken window. But instead of putting him in the car and taking him home to safety, he took him across the street or down the street to a funeral home. You know, your kid's just been involved in a mass shooting, and you take him to a funeral home?
Yeah, I think this heroic mom is just more of the bullshit. You know, they'd like to throw in some heroic line. John Lott, by the way, has demonstrated worldwide that gun ownership and homicide rates are inversely related, meaning the more guns, the lower the homicide rate. The Democrats try to sell us this bill of guns that the more guns, the more shooting, but it's the opposite. Lott has demonstrated this in spades worldwide, Alex. So everything the Democrats are doing here is absurd and indefensible. And remember, this is a party who wanted to defund the police. This is a party that brings up the progressive DAs who don't believe in bail, who want to turn criminals out on the streets and are emptying our jails and making life more hazardous and dangerous for ordinary Americans. And they want us to believe that they're the party we should keep in office. Alex, it's so insulting. It's beyond belief.
Yeah, and you'll notice, too, on the mainstream media, they never give any John Lott statistics, do they? It's, you know, it's always their own skewed numbers. So, yeah, I mean, I had a friend who was at an ATM one night. It was early in the morning. He was an engineer. He worked late, and he was withdrawing some cash, and he noticed two men to his side. And they were waiting for his money to get dispensed. And as soon as they heard his money get dispensed, they started walking toward him. And all my friend had to do is he just pulled his gun out and held it down to his side. And those guys just turned right around and walked away. So if he hadn't had a gun, his money would have been stolen and his life could have been taken. So
exactly, exactly, exactly. So, you know, in my opinion, even this business about the, you know, the brouhaha of the police not going in, it seems to me that compromised the emotional impact of the shooting, because now everyone's saying, well, what the F? The cops didn't even go in there. And I think it's actually creating a surge of desire to have more police and more schools and school protection officers. We even have the governor of Ohio authorizing teachers to carry guns in classrooms, reducing the number of hours of training required, which had been astronomical and inhibitive. What could be more obvious? Who's going to intimidate? A sign that says gun-free zone, you know, no weapons allowed, or a gun that says violators, trespassers will be shot on sight. You know, I mean, Alex, it's just incredible. If we want to protect our kids, taking guns away is not going to do it.
I think I would be more leery of the latter sign that you mentioned than the former. But then again, do we want our schools militarized over shootings that are not really happening?
I know.
Do we want our kids going through metal detectors at every school, and searches, and dogs going through the school, and tons of armed police officers walking the hall every day to become, you know, I don't want to police our schools that like that, or mm-hmm. militarize our schools like that. So yeah, I don't know. It gets frustrating, and I understand the need for school resource officers. I'm not saying anything against school resource officers. A lot of the big schools and everything, yeah, they need the school resource officers because they have big campuses and they have, you know, hundreds, sometimes thousands of students. But you know, this concept of just putting tons of police in every school all day long.
Yeah,
I don't like that.
It's a waste of resources. It's psychologically bad for the children. And these are fake events. Sandy Hook, Boston bombing, Orlando and Dallas, Charlottesville, Parkland, Las Vegas, Buffalo, Uvalde. Every one of those I've investigated thoroughly with other experts like yourself, Alex, and they're all fake. Every single one of them. Nobody died there, with the exception of the alleged Stephen Paddock at Las Vegas lying on the floor in his suite where there's a handful of shell casings distributed. And my colleague, Scott Bennett, who's a former Army Intel and PsyOps officer, observed that in the shell casing, some were for gas-propelled pellet guns and others were for blanks. In other words, the prop master didn't know any better and just threw down a handful. It's all bullshit from beginning to end. And the Democrats hammer, 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 as though all these shootings were real when they're all phony, they're all fake. Crisis actors galore. Everyone, you want to study these cases, don't let yourself be played. One way to go, if you check out my law enforcement false flag scripted event checklist, you can find it on my blog, you can download it. I have links to where you can look at multiple of these and proofs that they were staged. Every single one of these was staged. And I guarantee the evidence is overwhelming. You just have to look at it. Alex, I can't thank you enough for coming on today. And I think Harrison's doing a great job here. I'm looking forward to featuring him on a future show. Thank you so much.
Hang on. Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyalty? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence...